Well, hey, everyone. For this week's culture segment, we have another new guest to The Boundless Show. Her name is Lisa Turkhurst. Lisa, welcome.
Thank you.
Another Lisa on the show. So it'll be Lisa Lisa today. Lisa is the president of Proverbs 31 Ministries. Many of you probably know that. She's also the author of many, many books. I don't even know how in the world. It's like 15. I don't even know how you have time to write all these books. That is just amazing. The most recent, and the one we're going to talk about today, being Unglued, and it's called Making Wise Choices in the Midst of Raw Emotions. Now, guys, this is not the time for you to check out because you have emotions too. So this isn't just like, oh, I'm sure it's just going to be ladies talking about whatever. You're so emotional. No, actually, you guys have things to deal with as well. So this is going to be a good conversation. And like I said, she has been, she's an author and has been on a number of different media outlets as well, including now The Boundless Show. So she's kind of arrived in that sense. So very fun. Well, okay. First of all, Lisa, I know that you wrote this book. I mean, you certainly share a lot of your own experience and your own tendencies in this, and especially things, you know, emotions, raw emotions, as you describe them, manifest within your own family. And you talk about how emotions often will come out pretty much around those that we're closest to and those that we love, whereas we have a better chance, at least, of managing them in some way around those that we maybe don't care about as much or don't have as much contact with. So what would you say? Can you give an example from your own life of kind of where maybe something, a good example of where something like that happened to you?
Absolutely. Well, and when we're talking about emotions, you know, I love the fact that you said, oh, don't tune out, guys, because this applies to you. It really does, because really what we're talking about are not just general emotions that happen in everyday life, but it's those specific chaotic feelings and emotions that accompany conflict. Mm-hmm. And all of us deal with conflict. I mean, I've stood in front of audiences this past year asking, is there anyone in here in the past month that has at least dealt with one conflict? Well, of course, 100% of the audience raises their hand. And honestly, I could narrow that question down. Has anybody dealt with a conflict today, in the past hour, in the last 5 minutes? I mean, conflict is so much a part of what happens to us when we're in relationship. Relationship will drive conflict at some point. And my point is that conflict is not necessarily a bad thing. Having conflict doesn't mean that we have a bad relationship. What will really determine how good our relationship is not necessarily that we do or we don't have conflict, but it's knowing how to handle the conflicts that will arise. So in my life, I am married and I have 5 kids. I also work in an office full of women, and I'm on the road a lot dealing with many people that I've just met or longtime friends in ministry. So I have a lot of people in my life, and conflict naturally occurs. And usually conflict for me will happen when one of two things is present. Either I feel a little exposed or I feel opposed. Either conflict will happen because someone threatens to expose my vulnerabilities, my inadequacies, my insecurities. Then those chaotic feelings start to bubble to the surface and conflict will occur. Or conflict will happen when I feel opposed, because I want what I want, when I want it, how I want it. And when I don't get it, then conflict will arise and those chaotic feelings will happen. And so I have so many examples. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. Just today, riding over here, my husband and I had a growth opportunity. You know, that's what we call them now,
okay,
you know.
Good.
But even in my office setting, I mean, last year, Proverbs 31 Ministries has grown so much that one of my executive directors came to me and said, hey, Lisa, I think that we should, since you work from home a lot, I think we should, before we move into the new office, take your office and divide it up. That'll give 3 more places for people to sit. And then you can work at home, which you love to work at home anyways. And we move into the new office, of course, you'll get your office back. And when we had this conversation, I was fine with it. I just didn't expect to show up to the office the next day and have all that already happened.
Okay.
And all my furniture from my office and my pictures and my plants were all divvied out Like, I would walk into the financial office and there's a picture I had hanging on my wall yesterday. Oh. And then I walk into donor development and there's a plant that I used to have sitting on my desk. Mm-hmm. And so literally all my stuff had been taken and divided out and my office was gone. And that's just not how I had it in my mind. Mm-hmm. So I started thinking, I don't think these people that work for me respect me. And we have huge organizational issues, honestly, that we just do. And it was that whole feeling of, am I a good leader? Am I not a good leader? And feeling exposed that good leaders don't have people taking stuff out of their office. Good leaders don't have their organization deciding they don't need an office. Mm-hmm. And I was really undone about this. But then I sat down and had a quick conversation with my executive director, and I'm still kind of feeling raw and on edge about the whole thing. And she looked at me and she's like, hey, Lisa, remember we had a conversation about this and you said you were okay. And I said, I know, I'm fine, but I really wasn't fine. And then she asked me a question I won't soon forget. Lisa, what do you really want? And I said back, I want an office where I don't have three other people trying to clamor for room in that same space. And she said, well, you're going to get that as soon as we move. We respect you. We love you. We want you to have that office. And so a simple clarifying dialogue then helped prevent what could have been a pretty major eruption of the peace in my office. But you see, that's what happens. Mm-hmm. We don't wake up in the morning and think, woo, I'm ready to fight with someone today.
Yeah.
You know, that's not what happens.
Right.
But conflict just occurs.
Yeah. Well, and I think what's interesting too, and something that we should clarify, is that you're not saying that emotions are bad in general and having emotional responses. And you're not saying that, like you said, having conflict is bad or that having opinions on things is necessarily bad. So I want to know, one of the statements that you make in the book is that emotions should be indicators and not dictators.
That's right.
How can you ensure that your emotions are in fact indicators? Because I know a lot of people that aren't even aware of their own emotions sometimes, and then they wonder, wow, this is not the person I am. Why is this spewing out of my mouth? Or why can't I seem to express myself? And they feel very out of control.
Right. Well, I think it starts with being honest about the feelings that are there. And I mean, God gave us feelings, God gave us emotions so we could experience life. You know, they're wonderful indicators. But while God gave us emotions to experience life, he didn't give us emotions to destroy life. And so when I say feelings should be indicators, not dictators, what I really mean is our feelings are like the warning lights on a dashboard of a car. You know, it will say your oil is low, and that will give you a specific call to action. This is an issue to be addressed. That's the same way. Our feelings are indicators for us. If we're angry, that shows us, it's like a little warning light. There's an issue that needs to be addressed. If you want a healthy relationship, or for, you know, carrying out the car analogy, if you don't want your car to run out of oil, if you don't want your relationship to run out of oil, then you've got to put more oil in it. So this anger is a good indicator that something needs to be addressed. This is a call to action. Mm. But your anger shouldn't be a dictator. In other words, your anger shouldn't dictate now how you're reacting in this relationship. And so it starts with being aware. Like, okay, this aware of my feelings, like I am feeling angry. And sometimes as Christians, it's really hard to be honest about our feelings because we have this thought like, oh, no, Christians shouldn't get angry. Oh, no, Christians shouldn't yell. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, well, wait a minute. No, it's the Bible doesn't say don't get angry. It says don't react out of your anger, mm-hmm. you know, and so or don't sin, you know, don't let your anger carry you to a place where you're sinning. Mm-hmm. But being honest, like, yes, I'm angry. That is how I feel right now. Or yes, I'm hurt. That is how I feel right now. Learning to be honest with ourselves is a really first big step because we've got to make sure we know what we're feeling, let that feeling indicate what needs to be addressed, and what call to action we need to take, and it'll move us forward in healthy relationships. If we're not honest with our feelings, we'll stay stuck, and it'll create a cesspool of bitterness.
Mm-hmm. So this idea of being unglued, you know, the title of the book, you talk about two different responses. One is someone being an exploder and someone being a stuffer. And then there are kind of two variations of each of those underneath underneath those overarching ones. And I was talking to Martha before we met you, and I said, well, I feel like I'm both an exploder and a stuffer, and I would be the exploder blamer and then the stuffer avoider person. Mm-hmm. And I guess it just depends on the circumstance or the person that I'm dealing with. And of course, I can easily tell someone, you know, when I'm exploding, well, I'm just being direct, or I'm just being, you know, I make all these excuses. Are there any, okay, so what, obviously extremes of either of those are bad, and we need to see our tendencies, but how do we, I mean, is everyone either one or the other, or are there people that are genuinely good at handling their reactions to things, or how do we kind of navigate understanding ourselves in light of that?
Well, this is what makes determining our reaction type a little complicated and messy, is that we switch reaction types many times based on who we're reacting with.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll react differently with your boss than you would your roommate.
Mm-hmm.
You'll react differently with your mom than you would your friend.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of factors that come into play. With certain people who you're in closer relationships with, you have more history, which means you have more accumulated impact.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, if I did something that aggravated you today, you could probably let it go because we don't have any accumulated impact. But if you are like living with a roommate and your roommate does it today and tomorrow and the next day and the next day and the next day, mm-hmm. that those feelings get ratcheted up mm-hmm. to the point where you are on the verge of having a reaction for sure the mm-hmm. next time they do it. So that's what makes this all messy, you mm-hmm. know, different relationships, different intimacies in different relationships. So you'll have different reactions. So that was intuitive of you to say, sometimes you're an exploder, sometimes you're a stuffer. I would agree, absolutely, because that's what I am.
Mm.
I'll be an exploder who blames others with my kids. If you wouldn't have done this, I wouldn't do this. But mm-hmm. because you did this, I'm justified in feeling mad, and it's all your fault.
Mm-hmm.
The exploder who blames others.
Mm-hmm.
And for that reaction type, the best simple strategy that I've learned is to bring a pause into that relationship. Pause before I attack the person, because what I really want to do is attack the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can learn how to pause and teach ourselves to attack the issue and not the person, like, yes, do my kids need to make sure to put their shoes where they belong so when I'm ready to walk out the door that they know where their shoes are and we can get in the car and actually be on time? What a novel idea, right? You
mm-hmm.
know? Yes, but I have to attack the issue. Teach them strategies to find their shoes so we can leave and be on time. But instead, if I don't pause, what my tendency is, I can't believe you can't find your shoes. What kind of human can't find their shoes? They're either on your feet or in the closet.
Mm-hmm.
Wah, you know,
mm-hmm.
and then the chaos ensues from there. The second reaction type is the exploder who shames themselves. And sometimes these things go hand in hand. Like I can be both the exploder who blames and the exploder who shames myself right after that. But mainly in public, I could do this. I have a stronger reaction than what I was anticipating. Maybe with like the lady at the lost luggage counter at the airport. I really need her help. I need my luggage. She's not interested in helping me. She's had a bad day. And actually now she's decided she wants to get on the cell phone and talk to her boyfriend. And she's kind of ignoring me. And I want to let it go, but I feel like the justice of the world is hanging on this moment right now. Like this just needs to be addressed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a rule follower and she is clearly breaking the rules. I don't want everybody in the airport to know about this, but I want her to know that I know she's breaking the rules and she needs to help me find my luggage. And if you don't help me find my luggage, I'm not going to be able to give my Christian message when I'm supposed to go speak in just a few minutes,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so then an hour later, I get in the car and I think to myself, was I doing? I promised myself I would have better reactions. Why did I feel like it was my job to address her being on the cell phone with a boyfriend? Like, why couldn't I just overlook that offense? Why couldn't I just be more patient? Why couldn't I be more Christ-like? And I start shaming myself.
Hmm.
For me, before I have that reaction, when I'm about to be an exploder who will then later shame herself, I have to bring into that moment perspective and ask myself, if this is the worst thing that happens to me today, isn't it still a pretty good day? So those are the exploders. And then there's two kinds of stuffers. The stuffer that builds barriers, and that's the person, you know something's wrong, I know something's wrong. So I say, is something wrong? And you say back to me, oh no, I'm fine. That's the classic stuffer who's building a barrier line. And what's happening when you tell me you're fine, I know you're not fine, then you are shutting down the communication in our relationship. And if you shut down the communication in a relationship, the relationship potential is shut down. Mm-hmm. And eventually the relationship will die, because any relationship, you have to have communication. So when we build up these barriers, we start pretending everything's okay and backing off from the relationship, because it's easier to back off than to really deal with the issue. But here's what I've learned. I have to bring something into that moment before I start building that barrier. I have to bring honesty. I have to lay my honesty on the table and say, if I care about this relationship, I've got to keep talking. Because the minute that I stop talking, the minute I shut down the communication, is the minute that I'm going to back off, and eventually it's going to hurt the relationship. Now, when I say keep talking, I don't mean like just running your mouth and addressing every offense. I mean, certainly there are times to overlook an offense. But if it's a reoccurring pattern in our relationship, and I know I'm building a barrier against you, if I care about that relationship, I need to keep talking. The last one is the stuffer who collects retaliation rocks. This is one I do with my husband, unfortunately. I'll be fine. I'm fine.
Now that you wrote about it, he's wise to your ways. So now you're...
I know. And so are my kids, by the way.
Nothing to hide.
And my friends and my coworkers. But the stuffer who collects retaliation rocks, we want to process things in a healthy way. So that's our intention as we start out. But somewhere along the line, instead of processing things in a healthy way, we start collecting proof that I'm going to use against you later. And so I'll smile and say, oh yeah, I feel much better about that. But in essence, I've just gulped in more proof. Like one day I'm recording this in high definition in my brain, and the next time we have this argument about this topic, I'm going to have all this proof of this is a pattern in your life. You're wrong and I'm right. And I'm going to present my case. Mm-hmm. And so before I have one of those times with my husband where I start feeling like I'm about to pummel him with all of my proof, I have to ask myself, Lisa, are you trying to prove that you're right, or are you trying to improve this relationship? Because you can't do both. And that has stopped me dead in my tracks many times. If this is a relationship I care about, then I need to fight for this relationship. I need to improve this relationship. That needs to be a much higher priority than me trying to prove that I'm right. Four reaction types, four ways that we address conflict in our life, that those messy times that have chaotic feelings, we're either pushing those feelings out and exploding, or pushing the feelings inward and creating chaos internally. But regardless, we have, now that we know the four reaction types, we can come up with spiritual and emotional strategies to come back to the essence of the best reaction. And the best reaction is where we take the honesty of the exploder and the peacemaking of the stuffer, and we bring them together. And when I'm honest and I'm peacemaking at the same time, that's the reaction that I'm after.
Which is interesting, because I know that there are both exploders and stuffers who are right now trying to justify past reactions in their heads. And they're saying, well, but Lisa, you don't know my situation when I had to deal with this person, or you don't know. So I want to bring up one from each category. The first is going to be the exploder that says, you know, I'm not trying to retaliate. I'm not trying to verbally, you know, mow someone down. I'm just venting. Mm-hmm. I'm just being honest with my emotion. I'm just expressing myself. How do you know when that's okay and when you've crossed a line?
When I know I'm crossing a line in my honesty goes from gentle honesty to brutal honesty when I refuse to own my issue. So I'm bringing an issue into this conflict. Now, what I really want to do when I'm exploding is just address your issues. But the reality is, I know I'm having a better reaction when I come to the table and say, we've got an issue that I want us to address. And I'm going to start out by owning my part of it. This is my part of it. And then understand and let it sit there for a little bit and really listen to the other person without jumping back in and start addressing or justifying or pointing out their flaws. Mm-hmm. And I think if we can do that, if we can, any kind of reaction where we're about to explode or vent or just be brutally honest, we have to really challenge ourselves first. What have I contributed to this conflict? And I'm going to start there.
Okay, so now for the stuffer, a stuffer may be saying right now, well, I'm not really stuffing it, and I'm certainly not holding back any rocks. I've just decided that I have to let this go. But you kind of feel like, I don't know if you're really letting it go. I mean, that used to be one of my mom's classic comments was just drop it, just drop it. And it would drive me nuts because I always had to have resolution for something. So if you're trying to resolve conflict and the other person is just dropping it, then you're left holding the bag. So what about these stuffers that are claiming? I mean, I think some people can, in a healthy way, let things go genuinely, especially if they're not super important or whatever, or they're a naturally laid back personality, you know, God bless them. But yeah, I mean, what would you say then to the stuffer who wants to just say, well, I don't have to deal with everything. Some things I just have to let go.
Right. Well, I would say every relationship is on a continuum, either toward this beautiful oneness of like seeing things eye to eye and just having like you bring the best of who you are, I bring the best who I am, and this intimacy. We have this wonderful connection. Okay, so that's on one side of the spectrum. On the other side of the spectrum is isolation. So if you're truly letting it go, then it should be taking you closer to intimacy in that relationship. But what happens is we say we're letting go. In reality, we're pulled more towards the isolation in that relationship. We're backing off from the relationship. We're just saying, I don't need to hang around that person as much, or I don't really want to address this. I don't know how to address this. So sometimes letting it go can really be code for, I don't know how to deal with this, so I'm not going to.
Mm-hmm. Or it's unsafe territory, so yes. I'm just never going to bring it up again.
Exactly. Kind of, mm-hmm. So we have to be honest. In letting it go, are we being pulled toward isolating in the relationship or toward intimacy in the relationship? And if letting it go, if we truly can, and it leads us to better relationships, then hey, more power to you. I think it is good. I mean, it's biblical to overlook an insult. But sometimes we say we're overlooking an insult and it's really code for something else that's pulling us away from the intimacy in that relationship.
Yeah. So just in our, you know, in last couple minutes here, let's talk about what you alluded to, and that is really understanding how to work through conflict and ultimately dealing with our feelings in light of this in a way that does bring us closer to those that we have to be around every day. I mean, because there aren't many people that we can genuinely walk away from, you know, nor should we. So one, I know you share the scripture in the book from Philippians 4 about let your gentleness be evident to all. And I think this is another thing where we can easily cop out and say, well, I'm not really a gentle person. That's not me. That's my friend, Sally. That's my, you know, they're just sweet. They're just whatever. So we can easily say that. And I think in tandem with that, you addressed something, what you called looking at our underbelly, you know, and kind of recognizing that. So once we recognize our tendencies and see that, how do we really put on the spirit of Christ in gentleness to then begin to relate to others?
Yeah. I am not gentle by nature, typically. I can be sensitive in certain situations, but when my emotions get ratcheted up and when I'm in a conflict, it's not in my nature to be gentle per se. Mm-hmm. So I used to kind of make a joke about it, like, when God was handing out gentleness, I forgot to stand in that line, ha ha, you know? Mm-hmm. But what I've learned is, yeah, I may not be gentle by nature, but I can be gentle by obedience. Hmm. And that's an area where God's saying, okay, if this doesn't come natural to you, then this is an opportunity to step outside of what's natural and do it out of obedience to me. Because I have said to you, Lisa, let your gentleness be evident to all. I didn't just say let your gentleness be evident to those people who it's easy to show gentleness to. Mm-hmm. I said, let your gentleness be evident to all. And so when I started coming to the realization that I just kind of handpicked the fruits of the Spirit that I thought, yeah, that one fits me. That one doesn't really, but that's okay. That's just, we're all different. We all bring a certain slice of the pie to the puzzle, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, No, Lisa, if you're not gentle by nature, then you need to be gentle by obedience. And that's something that I've had to look up Bible verses in the Bible about gentleness, have the Lord really challenge me. Now, I will absolutely pray, Lord, I need a gentleness indicator in my brain to start flashing. I need you to just speak right into a situation that I'm facing. Like, hey, Lisa, this is an opportunity. Show gentleness right here. This is your opportunity to honor me. And the Lord, when you ask him to reveal those times where you need to be gentle by obedience, he is very, very loud in his instructions.
Mm-hmm. Well, good thoughts. There is so much else that we could talk about related to this. I want to remind you guys, the book is Unglued. I've been talking to Lisa Turkhurst here. Just something that kind of came to mind as you were saying that was how, and I think this would be particularly noticeable within our audience, is that with singles, there are probably some out there that are just saying, well, this isn't even something I struggle with. This isn't even, you know, whatever. And it's probably because if you don't feel any indicators toward this, you're probably not in real relationships, which is another whole concern. I mean, really, if you're living in a biblical way with other, whether believers or unbelievers, family members, naturally, those who see this in marriage are going to get this, you know, every day. But for those of us that are single and can retreat if we want to, we need to be intentional in running towards people and loving them, I think, with the love of Christ and being in real relationships and making sure that we are. So, Lisa, thanks for lending some great insight to this. And certainly there's more that folks can glean from the book. So do check it out. The book is Unglued.
Thanks. Thank you.